The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
And in this corner, weighing in with his take on current events, the smarty of the party, the mighty mite from the right, the heavyweight of debate, the man who's in cahoots with the grassroots, the broadcaster master, Jimmy Sangenberger.
Saturday night is always all right for the Jimmy Sangenberger Show right here on News Talk 710 KNUS. And as always, it is such a pleasure and a privilege to be with you here on good old News Talk 710 KNUS. Thanks so much for joining us, being a part of the program. If you want to join into the festivities 24/7, 365, multiple ways to get in contact with yours truly, you can email me via the 710KNUS website, 710KNUS.com. Go to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show page. You can also log on to my website, JimmySangenberger.com. Remember, there's no A, there's no I, there's no U in Sangenberger. It's all E's all the time. Once you know that, Sangenberger is easy. And there you can go to the contact page and shoot me an email. That way you can also tweet at me 24/7, 365, at Sang Center on Twitter. That's Sang with an E, not an A, Center on Twitter. And follow the Facebook page, like the Facebook page, facebook.com/JimmySangenbergerPro, or just search Jimmy Sangenberger Media Personality on Facebook. All right, so much to do tonight because I want to spend time in the third and final hour of the program paying tribute to a man I got to know a good bit. I interviewed him a number of times. He joined the advisory council for the Millennial Policy Center that I founded and used to run. And he was a noted economist. He was my first real introduction as a high school student listening to Rush Limbaugh when he would fill in to free market economics. I'm talking, of course, about none other than the great Dr. Walter E. Williams, who passed away at the age of 84 on Wednesday. In the third hour of the show, I want to pay tribute to Dr. Williams. I'm going to play my most recent interview that I did with him back in May and also talk about his life and legacy and share some of the column that I wrote for the Washington Examiner on Wednesday commemorating his legacy. So that's coming up in the third hour of the show. Also, this week I caught up with Stephen Moore of the Freedom Works organization, as well as the Committee to Unleash Prosperity and President Trump's Economic Recovery Task Force. I'm going to share that interview because we really dove into some economic policies in a way that I think is very instructive on what's going on and what we should be focusing on economically and some of the dangers of what they're talking about at this point in time in Washington, D.C., as Congress looks at a possible new so-called stimulus package. I'll share some thoughts on the makeup of the economy, what's happening in that regard, where things are headed, and so much more economically. That'll be good coming up in the second hour of the program. And at the bottom of this hour, I'm going to be joined by Priscilla Ron, who is a public school teacher in Denver, and she is speaking out on the need to reopen schools. I also had my very first column in the Denver Gazette just yesterday that was talking specifically about this issue, but particularly zeroing in on Cherry Creek Schools. I will get to that in a moment as well, but they are no longer dedicated to excellence at Cherry Creek Schools. Now they are dedicated to excuses, and I will explain why coming up in moments here on the show. Also want to sink my teeth into just a little bit the topic of this legislative session, the so-called extraordinary session that really was not so extraordinary in the legislature this week, in the Colorado General Assembly. So we've got so much that we're going to be diving into tonight here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. And I appreciate you being along for the ride. We will, of course, have the best Christmas bumper music known to man. And I'm feeling good about starting up for a moment with a little bit of Christmas cheer, some bluesified Christmas by the great Keb Moe, with yours truly sitting in on the harmonica here on the Jimmy Sengenberger Show. News Talk 710 KNUS.
Santa Claus, Santa Claus. Santa Claus, when you come this year, Santa Claus, Santa Claus, when you come this year. I want you to tell your reindeer when you're on your way. Please be extra careful. My baby's on your sleigh. Santa Claus, Santa Claus, I will see you on Christmas Day. Stay.
Gotta love a little blues at Christmas time. If you're not familiar with the amazing Keb Moe, you should be. Hope you enjoyed a little bit about, a little bit of that blues harp playing by yours truly, Jimmy Sengenberger, the only radio host you'll find anywhere who will occasionally just play along with the bumper music, and of course is the purveyor for more than 7 years running of the best bumper music known to man. So great to be with you always on the show, and especially at this time of year with all the amazing music that we can all just enjoy at the holiday season. Sometimes it's old school classic tunes, sometimes it's a little hard-nosed blues, but no matter what, it is always the best. So I want to dive into a few different topics for the moment before we're joined at the bottom of the hour by public school teacher in Denver Public Schools, Priscilla Ron. Specifically, two big issues. Number one is this legislative session. It took 3 days for what has been nicknamed the extraordinary session for the legislature to approve 10 bills. According to the Denver Gazette, the General Assembly approved, as I noted, 10 bills, with 8 specifically tied to the special session call POLIS issued on November 19th. The legislature was charged with dealing with 7 specific areas for the session. Aid to restaurants, bars, and other small businesses, including direct payments and allowing those businesses to retain sales tax collected for 4 months. Direct aid to child care providers, rent and mortgage assistance, providing internet access to rural and low-income K through 12 students, teachers, and school districts, aid to food pantries, assistance with utility bills, and a boost in funding that helps the state deal with the pandemic. Two additional bills, not included in the call, also were adopted by the General Assembly. A bill on premium insurance tax credits tied to a COVID-19 relief bill passed in the 2020 regular session, and a bill to allow local governments to cap the fees charged to restaurants by food delivery companies. Governor Polis has been signing these bills into law. What was not accomplished was anything that would have reined in the governor, anything that would have taken back for the legislature its authority under the state constitution, the authority exclusively of the General Assembly to make laws. They didn't take back that authority. They didn't have a legislative resolution to reassert legislative authority under the state constitution. Now, there were several Republican bills that tried to do this. State Senator Paul Lundeen of Monument tried to move forward with legislative oversight of governor emergency powers. As Paula Noonan writes in Colorado Politics, in criticism of this resolution, she said it would, quote, permanently hamstring the current and future governors from making difficult decisions about how to manage the state's safety during a crisis such as what we're experiencing now. The handcuffs used to prevent emergency risk management include a 30-day limit to a governor-declared emergency. If the emergency requires more time, the governor must seek approval from the General Assembly with a 2/3 approval vote in both chambers. And that's too much for Paula Noonan. The resolution was defeated, but it was one effort to try and rein him in. Noonan also speaks critically of State Senator Rob Woodward's effort. He runs a Subway franchise in Fort Collins, owns it. And his Senate concurrent resolution, as she described it, would immediately stop the governor's COVID emergency order regardless of the virulence of the pandemic. It's unclear what steps would be allowed if the virus started killing people in numbers even greater than the current high level and hospital ICU beds were overrun and medical caretakers couldn't handle the load. This let them get sick and die approach was also killed. That's what it was. Trying to rein in the governor's authority and say, nope, you can't do this anymore unilaterally. Republican Representative Stephen Humphrey and term-limited State Senator Vicky Marble, both from the Northern Front Range, Noonan goes on, put up a bill to severely restrict the governor's capacity to manage a public health emergency. The gist of the bill is that the governor may not curtail an individual's constitutional right, which she puts in quotes, to, among other activities, travel, work, assemble, or buy weapons. An emergency order can only be mandated for 7 days, after which it requires 2/3 majority of both chambers of the General Assembly to continue. The bill took its one and only breath on Monday and died. So there were a few bills to try and say, look, the legislature should have much more of a role in this. The merits of these bills can and should have been debated as far as the strategy. I kind of like the idea of allowing the governor 30 days and then have to go to the legislature. I think that makes sense. But this was completely shot down. I don't know why the hell they're calling this an extraordinary session when they did things absolutely ordinary. Let's simply pass particular legislation, some bills, that try to make things a little bit easier in dealing with this lockdown light. Let's make it a little easier for people to get by. And that's it. What would have been extraordinary in a legislative session is if the legislature, the General Assembly, resoundingly said, We are going to take back our authority under the state constitution. We are going to have a legislative revolution against King Polis, and we are now going to make the decisions on how the pandemic will proceed in terms of government policies, rather than the governor. Instead, they just gave a rubber stamp to everything that Governor Polis is doing in effect and said, we'll just cushion the blow a little bit for Coloradans. We're not going to rein you in, governor. We're not going to do anything about your authority, the power that you have accumulated in your own hands. Instead, we're just going to make it easier for people to get by with your authority. What is extraordinary about a legislature that just goes with the flow and merely passes some small bills to cushion the blow while not actually affirming its position of authority? Nothing. That's the answer. Nothing is extraordinary about this legislative session beyond the fact that they got together during a pandemic, which, by the way, they already did in, what was it, May? When they came back after breaking from the session? They came back in May? And that's not really extraordinary. It's their job. There's nothing extraordinary about this legislative session. But I do have to give kudos to some of the Republicans who tried to fight a little bit, to push back just a little bit against Governor Polis, and also to put forward some other practical measures that I think are important. State Senator Jack Tate, for example, he's retiring, but he was called back and he put forward a bill to protect small businesses from COVID liability. That was shot down, didn't have a chance, which is unfortunate because that really is an important piece of legislation. Kudos to Jack Tate, State Senator Rob Woodward, Vicky Marble, Steve Humphrey, Paul Lundeen, other Republicans who did what they could to at least try to bring some semblance of accountability and some semblance of decent policy into the equation. Unfortunately, the failure of the Democrat-controlled House and Senate to actually take real action is very discouraging, not surprising at all, but very discouraging, and underscores that they are simply rubber stamps for Governor Polis, and that this session was absolutely unextraordinary. Again, no surprises whatsoever. This is exactly what we expected. But it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be. It should have been a so-called extraordinary session. Nothing extraordinary about it. Meanwhile, when we look at the situation of closed schools or remote-only education, that's where you also find something unextraordinary and unexcellent. My first column as a weekly columnist for the Denver Gazette came out yesterday entitled Cherry Creek Schools Dedicated to Excuses. We're going to talk about reopening schools broadly with Priscilla Ron, a teacher herself in Denver Public Schools, in the next segment. But I want to highlight something about Cherry Creek Schools. See, when we moved here almost 20 years ago, January 5th, 2001, from New Jersey, and prior to that, I was born in upstate New York and lived a few years there. Well, we moved here from New Jersey on January 5th, 2001. And when we moved here, I was put into Cherry Creek Schools, which was the cream of the crop. I spent the rest of my fifth grade year at Rolling Hills Elementary, then went on to Falcon Creek Middle School, and ultimately graduated from Grandview High School in 2008. So for 7.5 years, I was fortunate enough to go through Cherry Creek Schools, which was genuinely, and you could tell, dedicated to excellence. But sadly, through no fault of the tremendous teachers that make up Cherry Creek Schools, but because of its admonishable administration, Cherry Creek School District, my friends, is now a shadow of its former self and nothing more. Amidst the COVID-19 pandemic and under Superintendent Scott Siegfried's tutelage, This school district, which I used to say I'm a proud product of Cherry Creek Schools, this school district has swapped its commitment to excellence for a commitment to excuses. And parents in the school district have a right to be outraged. You know, as I write in Denver Gazette for weeks, Cherry Creek Schools was fairly transparent about the data they were using for COVID decision-making. The district followed its own data until recently, but on Tuesday, this past Tuesday, Cherry Creek Schools announced it will finish out the semester exclusively with remote learning. And they offered a brand new excuse. It's the parents' fault. Blame and shame the parents. To quote a tweet on Tuesday, the district said, quote, due to the high COVID incident rate and minimal reporting of student cases, CCSD is unable to operate schools. K through 5 online and elevation students aren't impacted. Minimal reporting of student cases? Here you have Cherry Creek School District publicly accusing parents of lying, omitting, and underreporting about COVID in their households. Well, has it occurred to the district that there might be fewer student cases as they stay home, and CCSD is merely assuming culpability of parents as failing to report kids as COVID positive? When did parents become the enemy? Now, if you're a parent in or out of this district, I'll forgive you if you just scoffed at such snide and condescending language from a conceited school district with unchecked power over your children's access to excellent education. Good friend of mine, Michelle, mother of three in the district, told me I'm big mad and I can't blame her. But folks, wait, there's more. Without warning or explanation, Cherry Creek Schools decided to take down their science-based metrics dashboard. This page is currently unavailable. That's what you see when you go to that page. Depriving parents of easy access to verifiable data. Who's doing the minimal reporting now? Thankfully, the page is still on the Internet Archive, so you can check out the metrics before Tuesday's decision. But this happened on what would have been day 7 of sustained rating change, allowing children to go back to in-person learning. According to the limited data still available on the Cherry Creek School District website, the rating as of Tuesday's announcement would have been even better than the past 7 days. All this immediately after teacher furloughs extended the Thanksgiving break from the normal 3 days to a full week. And lest we forget, a month after voters approved ballot measures giving CCSD more money. Again, I said it before, I'll say it again. They took the money and they ran. I've written before about how damaging, and I've spoken many a time about how damaging forced remote learning is. Dr. Anthony Fauci and Governor Polis all have finally caught up on this and agreed and are talking about it. And yet it's not happening. And instead, what happens with a district like Cherry Creek Schools is they blame the parents. When Cherry Creek Schools' own metrics justify a return to in-person learning, they scrub their website of those data points, blame the parents, and accuse them of deception. Because Cherry Creek School District is the new expert. No longer dedicated to excellence, but dedicated to excuses. Because it seems when a school district dedicates itself to excuses, educational excellence and actual expertise become irrelevant. Think about that one. I'm Jimmy Sangenberger. We're going to take a quick break. Denver Public Schools teacher Priscilla Rock joining me on the other side. Your News Talk 710 KNUS. Snow,
but have a cup of cheer. Have a holly jolly Christmas. And when you walk down the street, say hello to friends you know and everyone you know.
I'm in the kitchen. kitchen cooking, and the children upstairs asleep. It's time for old Santa Claus to make his midnight cream call.
Santa Claus wants some loving.
Yeah, now.
Santa Claus wants some loving.
I know it's something real pretty under that Christmas tree. I ain't had no loving in this worrying me, cause
Santa Claus wants some loving.
Do you hear me?
Santa Claus wants some loving.
I'm trying to fix this old bicycle. I can't seem to find my plows. I'm halfway watching mama before she get that sleep in her eyes, cause
Santa Claus wants some loving. Santa Claus wants some loving.
You know, if you're looking for some clever and fun Christmas tunes, you need look no further than the blues. Here you go, a little of the great late Albert King, one of the three kings of the blues, doing his fun and funky Christmas tune, Santa Claus Wants Some Lovin'. And you know what? With all the stressors and all the difficulties that we are dealing with in 2020, and especially around this Christmas season, I think we all need to spread a little love and treat each other with the utmost kindness and respect and support, because you never know what that other person might be going through. And by the way, I do have to make a note that Albert King was just an absolutely incredible guitar player. There's a reason why he is known as one of the three kings of the blues. And you could hear a little bit in that solo right there. Welcome back to the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. News Talk 710 KNUS. Best Christmas bumper music known to man. And it is such a pleasure and a privilege to be back with you as always. And I want to continue. Speaking of loving other people, that starts with children. And making sure that children are getting the quality education that they deserve, that they are being treated with care and compassion, parents as well, and teachers too. That means, folks, that we need to reopen our schools. In the last segment, I talked a little bit about what's going on in the Cherry Creek School District, which is sort of a microcosm of everywhere else, but I want to broaden the issue out to reopening schools and what needs to happen in that regard and why. With the teacher herself, Priscilla Ron is a middle school music teacher, and she joins me now here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. Priscilla, welcome back to the program, and Merry Christmas.
Hi, Merry Christmas, Jimmy. Thank you for having me on, and I concur. That was amazing bumper music.
You know, Albert King always knew how to have some fun, and that was definitely a fun tune. And just, you could tell, I think it was like the 70s, you can tell that it has that 70s feel to it as well. But a funky Christmas tune is pretty fun, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was my decade, was the 70s. And of course, I'm biased as a music educator. So well done.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And of course, music, as you know, is a shared passion of ours. And you are, as you mentioned, and I mentioned before, a music teacher. And certainly that is, like, the arts are absolutely critical in our education for a variety of reasons. Of course, that's a discussion for another time. But music education, like every other class in schools, is going through a very difficult stage right now in terms of in-person learning being cut off, and you are doing remote education. Big picture, Priscilla Ron, what's your thought on where things are at in terms of remote education, let alone why we need to get kids back in school? We'll get to that in a moment, but what things are like right now?
Well, remote education right now, we're limping. We're limping along in delivering high quality, rigorous education to our children. There are so many roadblocks to delivering instruction to children in their homes. I mean, we can start with issues with technology, the quality of the technology that students have, the Wi-Fi situation. When we have several siblings in the home and even parents working from home, trying to stream on the same Wi-Fi, there are a lot of issues with students getting kicked out of the classroom chat, where they can't log on. Cameras don't work. Microphones don't work. Maybe some older siblings are taking care of younger siblings and can't log on to their class because the parents aren't home, making sure that their child is logged on to class and doing their work. And, you know, I talk a lot about the type of stimulation that children are getting, whether it's under stimulation because they might be home alone. You have those students who aren't able to go outside, they're not going anywhere, and they don't have the social connections. To those students who are overstimulated because they are logged onto the technology all day long, playing games, watching videos, socializing, and we do have an issue in Denver Public Schools where we can't force the children to turn on their cameras. So children are even logging on, their mics are not on, their cameras are not on, and they're doing something else and they're not present in class, and there's no way to enforce it.
You know, let me just jump in on that point, because I have a friend whose wife is a teacher, and he told me exactly about that, and she's concerned about that issue of kids not actually paying attention when they're supposed to be in class, because you can't mandate in Denver Public Schools, where she also teaches, you can't mandate that cameras and mics be on.
Right. And this is an equity issue, right? You keep hearing in the community about social justice and equity and the achievement gap. But there's an argument about whether or not we can force children to turn on their cameras because we're in their homes now, right? And so we can't necessarily force children to let us into their homes, but there's right. No way for a teacher to ensure that a child is paying attention or even a child is safe in their home environment, because we can't assume that all children being at home are in a safe environment.
How are you able to conduct music education in particular over a Zoom? I don't know how you can make that happen, especially if you need them to be singing loudly or any instruments or anything like that. What is it that you're doing in middle school music education from a practical standpoint?
Well, we're doing all synchronous learning. So when I have all of my students together, I might teach them a concept. Like, so today we might work on just steady beat, or we might work on embouchure, or we might work on air support. And then it's up to them to then go and practice their music. And I require them to send me videos of them performing one-on-one. And so then it's almost like a private lesson virtually for each one of my students. So we'll have a short time together. And then I spend the rest of my time giving them individual feedback on their individual videos.
Well, there's something sort of nice about the one-on-one. That's not even close to what you need to be having in order to be effective in music or any other form.
Well, the students want, especially beginners, they want to play fun music. They want to be with their friends and they want to play band songs. They don't want to be working on rudiments and scales and technique. But we're limited, and I actually had to work really hard to keep my students, because the way remote scheduling was working out in our district, I was going to lose all of my band and orchestra students. There are several schools in Denver Public Schools who are not doing any instrumental music or any vocal music because of the way the schedule works. And I think it's a shame that we're depriving our children of their arts education.
Well, and as you know, I'm a harmonica player myself, and so I never learned that in school, but I certainly did take music classes, and that helped lay foundation for me to go on to take guitar lessons for years independently. But in school is where you learn a lot of these basics and where you can find a passion. You know, is there an instrument that you're really interested in, or what do you like? You know, you learn these basics, and then that can set you up for so much in the future. You never know what might end up happening. And so I totally agree that music education really is critical. Priscilla Ron, again, our guest middle school music teacher, joining us here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. So just one more question in terms of the practical application of in-class learning. How are other teachers that you talk with, not just music teachers, but in all the different fields, how are they handling this? And are they getting the kind of support that's needed? Because you're totally undoing the education model. And it's not like you were all trained in school or anything on how to do remote education. And that's what you were intending to do.
Right. There's a high level of frustration amongst teachers because of their accountability piece. right? So we're actually still waiting to find out if we're going to have CMAS testing in the spring. So our literacy and math teachers are feeling a lot of pressure to make sure that students are hitting specific benchmarks in case there's testing that's going to be happening. But then it's also, how are we grading students? And every district is different. Are you going to get a no grade like we did in the spring? Whether you did your work or didn't do your work, students got an NG, which is a no grade. So then you eliminate motivation for students to do work if there's not some other outside motivation for them. And so it's a really complicated issue. School districts are making counseling available. I mean, it's sad to say, but every teacher has access to a certain number of free counseling sessions to help us get through whatever issues that we're having to tackle. So, but it's a frustrating situation.
Well, I can totally understand that, especially if you are a teacher who has kids at home yourself.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I mean, it makes it extremely difficult to have to decide where you're going to put your primary focus as a parent.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how parents who are working in general with multiple kids at home or even one kid at home is able to do it, especially if you are an educator and you're supposed to be focused so much on the classroom and these other kids remotely, and then your own kids may be at home. How you juggle that is, I think, remarkable on the one hand, but on the other hand, it just underscores why this needs to stop and schools need to be reopened.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. We need to get kids back in school.
Let's talk about some of the impacts of this idea of remote education and why we need to get kids back into school. I mean, the data is very clear, and I've seen you writing and speaking about this, Priscilla Ron. The data is very clear that children are not in an adverse situation when it comes to going in the classroom and COVID-19. In fact, we have seen remarkably few kids get this virus or spread it, or particularly in the tragic instance where they may die of it. Tell us what you're noticing from some of the data here.
Sure. I always like to start off my response by acknowledging that this is a very serious virus, that I have loved ones and friends who have experienced some of the worst symptoms of COVID. And so I want to share that I am coming from a place of empathy. As a teacher, I live my life for my children and my students. But we have to look at the science and the data. And it's actually extremely encouraging when you look at the data amongst school-age children, 5 to 17, it's proven that they do not spread or catch COVID at a large rate. So we have very, very few deaths in New Jersey, where they have some of the highest positive cases of COVID. They have zero children of school age who've died. In California, massive numbers of positives, but only 2 children have died. And nationwide, we only have 123. And I say only 123, not as a flippant
of course
way of giving the data, but just to say, you know, we have over 300 million people in the U.S. And so the data is really, really small. And plus, we don't know if children are dying of COVID or from COVID. We don't know if adults are, because we have adults in hospice who die and are being and it's on their death certificate, died of COVID. But we just don't know the extent of what COVID has played in those deaths.
Yeah.
So there are schools across the nation that have successfully kept schools open, or like in Denver Public Schools, we actually had elementary schools that were open. We started the school year with elementary going back to school. You look at New York City, closed, and the parents and the teachers raised a fit and they reopened schools after 2 weeks. So you don't do that if there's not data to support keeping schools open, especially in a city like New York City. Mm-hmm. We have to be calm, because, having also been a building leader and a principal, you need to be calm, you need to be objective, you need to look at the facts, and you need to look at how the decisions impact the whole community. And the hardest hit and the highest impacted children that need to go to school are not going to school, and yeah, including our special education students.
That is, has been one of my most significant concerns, has been special needs children who literally it's not functional for them to be getting online education. And it's just so distressing to think about those kids who are really being left behind. And one thing that's important, especially when we're talking about younger kids in elementary school, the lack of good quality in-class education, Priscilla Ron, sets them behind in ways that can be dramatic for years and years to come.
Absolutely. And we have laws to follow. We have federal laws that require students that have IEPs and 504s receive services. So if they're not in school, especially our AN students and our highest needs physical students, the parents are not trained at the same level as our certified special education teachers. And so, to your point, to try to deliver rigorous education and to support and differentiate instruction,
yes,
for these students that need it, it makes it almost impossible. Because we have students that are like nonverbal who need a special type of support, and so they're not able to receive those supports.
Yeah. Well, I also ran a number just in the calculator here. When we have tragically lost 276,000 Americans to COVID-19 or, mixed with other pre-existing conditions or comorbidities or what have you, but 123 kids have died, as you noted, and that is 0.044% of the COVID-19 deaths, and yet we are shutting down schools for in-person learning, or in some cases altogether, with long-lasting implications. And that is just that is unacceptable, which is why I have written so much about this in Colorado Politics and now the Denver Gazette, and why I've been speaking out about this. And I am so glad to have you on, Priscilla Ron, and also to know that there are many other teachers who are just absolutely frustrated along with parents. And they're concerned because you didn't go into, if I may speak for you for a moment, I know you well enough to know that you didn't go into education because you just wanted to get a paycheck. You wanted to go into education because you wanted to teach kids, especially in the music world, about a passion and something you know very well. That's why teachers get into the world of teaching, and you're being hamstrung in being able to do it.
Absolutely. You know, when I started teaching 27 years ago, I didn't know that I was going to experience like 9/11 or Columbine. And now, COVID, but, you know, there was a time where I was going through training for triage and, you know, shootings. And like, we give our lives as teachers to protect other people's children. And so I look at this the same way. I'm willing to sacrifice my health, yeah, to go and educate children so that they can learn and they can have a future. I've already been to school. I've already graduated. I've got my degrees, right? It's their future that we're talking about. And there is a way to do it safely. We've talked about ensuring PPE, and we've talked about how we were going to make sure that children have a balance of wearing masks in school to keep them safe, but also making sure they have like these mask breaks and that they're able to be children and play and, you know, have some sort of a similar normal life until the COVID pandemic gets under control. But yes, exactly. There are teachers who want to be in the schools and who are fighting for our children's future.
In that regard, when we're talking about how to go about safely engaging in classroom, in-person learning, Priscilla Ron, what about the idea that I remember earlier in the year, at least Cherry Creek School District had this plan, which was, we're going to ask teachers, do you feel comfortable teaching in the classroom or not, especially older teachers who may feel less comfortable? Then ask parents, okay, do you want your kids in the classroom or do you want them to do remote learning? And then have those teachers who wanted to be at home be assigned to helping those kids that wanted to remote, and then have the in-person learning, especially since the science and the data demonstrate that spread in schools is not anything like so many people were fearing, especially when it comes to the death count. What do you make about the best strategy for school districts to actually go about ensuring in-person learning when it comes to not just masks, but in terms of maybe how you structure those dynamics in terms of who teaches in class, who doesn't, that sort of thing?
Sure. Sure. Like a hybrid model or 100% in-person model only works if you have enough manpower. And I don't think that asking people their feelings is the way you make a definitive decision. You know, I get these surveys every other week asking me how I feel about something in my, and it's frustrating because it's not an important factor for me. Like, I want to know the facts and the data, especially because of how it's negatively impacting children. I think it's worse to have all of our children away from school than it is to be in school. But we have teachers who are at risk, and so there should be accommodations made for them. But even if we're in a hybrid model or back to school, we don't have enough subs to cover. So I think that we have to get creative in how we say we're going to go back to school, or we're going to have a hybrid model or 100% in-person model with a small group that might be able to do, you know, remote. But we need to restructure maybe our relationships with some of the universities that have schools of ed, where maybe this is a great time for these future teachers to be in the classrooms. We'll pay them, you know, pay them the sub rate and give them practicum experience.
You know, I think that is a great idea for multiple reasons. One of them is that these teachers who are going through teacher education at colleges aren't in the classroom themselves. So it gives them more of a hands-on opportunity and to get out of their own homes.
Absolutely. And I think for student teaching, they don't get enough time. I mean, I think they give them a year or two, just like a doctor, right? You know, have them teach alongside maybe a master teacher and do a slow release and give them their own classroom, or let them be in a school all year long as the in-person sub that's available anytime a teacher's out. So that's one idea that I have.
I only have about 30 seconds left here with you, Priscilla Ron. Again, middle school music teacher in Denver Public Schools. What are you getting from administration when you talk about this, broadly speaking, or what are other teachers getting? Because they're the ones who make the decisions on schools open or closed.
Sure. I think the administration and even school boards are getting mixed messages, and they want to, you know, please everybody, which they can't. But they're getting a lot of pressure from different groups. The loudest group gets the oil. Right. So we that believe that our children need to be in school need to go to our school board meetings and write letters and be heard to make sure that our children have their public education.
Great advice. There are so many other angles that we could dive into. But Priscilla Ron, I so appreciate you coming on for this very important conversation and for sharing your thoughts on why you and your students need to be back in school. Thanks so much for joining us, and early Merry Christmas to you.
Thank you, and Merry Christmas to you, too.
All right, we're going to take a quick break here on the Jimmy Sangenberger Show. We've got two more hours left to go. Stay with us, 710 KNUS.